Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Bring the noise.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Welcome to Earth.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Bong. James Bong.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Your move, creep.
Get off my plane.
Get your ass to Mars.
I feel mean. The name's Earth.
I'm your huckleberry.
We see we cut the Kit Kat and haul.
Hey, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to the Everything ExtraCast, the podcast for November 30th, 2020. I'm your host, Zach, and joining us, we have Chris.
Hello.
And, yeah, we're back for Thanksgiving, and things started off kind of slow. I think everyone was kind of, like, getting back in the swing of things for Thanksgiving, but there is, especially today we're recording this, there is some gigantic news to talk about, so let's dive right in, and, yeah, talk about the, probably one of the biggest news stories of, like, the whole year, possibly, and definitely into next year, is that Warner Brothers basically dropped like a nuclear bomb onto the streaming wars, and they announced that every single release that they're putting in theaters next year is going to be a day and date released on HBO Max as well.
Yeah, pretty big thing to like offer, because it's not like surprise, it's like, no, we want both markets, we're coming for both.
Yeah, which so we knew, like, I think a week or two ago that's what they announced, that like for Wonder Woman 1984, and I think most people thought that was gonna be like kind of like a one-time special thing just for that movie, but it is going, yeah, it's going to be every single Warner Brothers release next year. Yeah, so the same day it releases in theaters will be on HBO Max. It'll be on HBO Max for 1 month, and then it'll be gone from the service, and then to give like theaters like an exclusive window of what, when it's only going to be in theaters. And then it'll be premium on the video on demand, and then eventually like home video. And then it's not clear if it's like, if they're going to come back to HBO Max when they're like actually released on DVD or Blu-ray or like sometime after that. That's not really clear yet. And internationally, it's just going to be theatrical releases, because HBO Max is not really available anywhere outside the U.S.
I'm wondering if they're charging another premium for those movies, or is it just straight, like, hey, if you have HBO Max, you can watch the movies today.
It's not Disney Plus premium access. It is, like, if you subscribe to HBO Max, you are seeing these movies, you can see these movies the day they open in theaters.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, it is totally just like upends theatrical screenings, and like the theaters are not happy about it. Like AMC put out a statement that AMC didn't go as far as like earlier this year when they like were going to like ban every Universal movie from their theaters, but like they were very upset about it. I think Cinemark was also who I think owns Regal.
Universal was pissing them off.
Yeah. Cause there's not really any sort of like, idea of like, I think the only thing that like, says is like, they might take like a smaller chunk of the theatrical box office. Like usually like when a movie comes out, like the first weekend, like the studio gets like 70% of the ticket sales or so, like 67% of the ticket sales, and then it goes down every week the movie's out in theaters. So I think Warner Brothers said they're gonna like maybe take a smaller chunk of the theatrical release, but also it's like you're like the audience would be probably way smaller than it would be, because people can just stay home and watch it on HBO Max.
Yeah, so you've shrunken the market aggressively, yeah. And then you've really reduced the need to go out.
And also, like, because of this year, like, theaters are on, like, the brink of, like, death. everyone's on the brink of bankruptcy and, like, closing. It's just, like, when theaters are, like, kind of open normally, hopefully, in, like, the summer and into, like, the end of next year, like they need like every single person they could possibly get into a theater to like make money back and start like rebuilding themselves. But yeah, like there's gonna be like, probably a ton of people are just like, eh, it's I have HBO Max. I can watch. I'm gonna watch like The Matrix 4 at home and not go to the theaters to see it.
Yeah, I don't understand the. I understand the need to just dominate HBO Max because they put a lot of eggs in their basket.
I mean, yeah, this pretty much makes HBO Max like a must subscribe to if you like, because you're gonna get like 17 theatrical releases next year, the day they open theaters.
No extra fee,
yeah. And I mean, in huge movies too. Like, starting with Wonder Woman 1984, obviously, in like a week or two here on Christmas Day, and then, it's next year. It's stuff like Dune, The Matrix 4, Godzilla vs. Kong, the new Mortal Kombat, Tom and Jerry, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, which is the third Conjuring movie, Space Jam 2. A new James Wan movie, *Malignant*. The Lin-Manuel Miranda movie, *In the Heights*. The *Sopranos* prequel movie, *The Many Saints of Newark*. The *Suicide Squad*. And then a bunch of other ones. So it's huge, huge movies are gonna be like just like part of your HBO Max subscription. And also, I think with Wonder Woman 1984, they're also implementing 4K finally, so it's going to be 4K HDR on all these movies as well next year. I guess, I think depending on what device you have, I think like some of the consoles aren't going to have HDR. And also, like, it's still, like, I don't know how this affects, like, goddamn Roku, like, if they're ever going to get, like, the HBO Max, if it's, like, pressures Roku to be, like, to like finally like cave in and like let HBO Max be on like a like not a channel, like let it be its own app. I think I've read like they thought they might be close to like a deal finally, so hopefully that happens maybe before Wonder Woman comes out.
Figure out the streaming war battle lines.
Yeah. But yeah, it is absolutely nuts. And then also, like, could other studios start doing this too? Like, is Universal going to maybe start doing this? I mean, Universal doesn't really have like a streaming service to like throw stuff on, but like,
I mean, not yet.
But I think Disney was leaning that way because like they're like really like I think Disney's like basically restructuring their whole company behind Disney Plus. Like, and I think they said like a bunch of their like movies that were going to be in theaters possibly are going to be like just either premium access or just on Disney Plus for subscribers. Like, I think like a bunch of the live action reboots are going to be possibly Disney Plus movies. So yeah, it's going to be crazy to see how this affects theaters next year, and also just like releasing movies in general. And like, they said it's only gonna be for next year, but like if they get like a ton of like subscribers for HBO Max and it works out like super well for them, like there's no way Warner Bros. Is gonna be like, hey, we're gonna go back to we're not gonna do this anymore, it's just gonna be theaters again.
Yeah, it's hard to go back once you establish these new rules.
Yeah,
or these new standards that basically shows you can still make money without doing it the old-fashioned way that potentially right now it's just like not agreeing.
Yeah. So so starting Christmas Day with Wonder Woman 1984, and then going all next year, all your big Warner Brothers movies are gonna be just part of your HBO Max subscription. $15 a month for I mean probably at least probably like one or two movies a month. Like that's like that, like that like pays for HBO Max itself. I feel like if you get like one theatrical release a month, because if you went to see it in theaters, it'd probably be close to $15. So
yeah, it's about. And it, especially if you just already have the subscription before, like it just kind of tells you to keep going with it.
Yeah, I read some theorizing too that like Because like a bunch of shows got delayed because of the pandemic, like HBO might not HBO and HBO Max might not have a lot of like TV shows ready to go for next year. So this is like, this might be like a way to like, if they don't have like new shows to like keep people coming to like subscribing to HBO and HBO Max, like movies, like theatrical movies is like the way to like keep people subscribed.
But then it kind of cheapens some theatrical movies, because at that point it's like streaming movies, and there's still like a stigma over that, because Netflix kind of, like, it's hit or miss with Netflix streaming exclusive movies.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it kind of joins that fight, where it's like, can these stream movies be quantified as like regular cinema, even though you could see it freely, and it's like super easy to just stop and rewind and analyze everything? That's a problem.
Well, it's also a thing we ran into this year. Like, what makes, like, if your movie is not gonna be in theaters, but if it was going to be in theaters, like, what makes that a premium video on demand compared to just like a regular video on demand? Like, just because it might have been in theaters, it's a premium video on demand. You have to pay $20 for it instead of
changes the
$6 or $5 for it.
And then it's like, is this a movie that's like, oh, a blockbuster because it sold so much, or people just watched it, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of weird languages and terms that they're going to have to redefine.
Yeah, it's going to be wild next year to see what happens. But yeah, we'll definitely be keeping an eye on all that stuff. So, moving on to other news, some sad news for fans of DuckTales, the new reboot DuckTales, is being canceled by Disney. The current season, which is season 3, is going to be the final season. They did say they're going to be able to, they're going to finish it in a set, like, hopefully a satisfying series finale. It will have, like, a definite ending.
Okay, that's good.
And the last batch of episodes is going to be, I think, early next year. And then I think it's slightly under, like, I think it's like 10 episodes left or something, and then it's done.
Now, do you think this is like COVID, or do you think this is they had this like to like they wanted to end it for some financial reason? Because definitely the fan base was growing, and you know, people loved what they were watching, but it's such a weird decision.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's because of like, because they said like the physical productions is wrapping up for this current season, so maybe they're just like this is like a good time to end it, because so we don't have to worry about like COVID restrictions like for next season. And there's also weirdness too, but like the Darkwing Duck reboot, I guess that kind of like confirms like maybe this isn't gonna be like that's gonna be like its own separate thing, because DuckTales is canceled. So
yeah, not a lot of characters are gonna be carried over, you know. It's gonna be, it's like Launchpad.
Yeah,
I don't know why they had to cancel the whole show just to bring Launchpad to that.
Yeah, and it's weird like why, like, You can't have two animated duck shows in production at the same time. Like,
I guess people would be confused.
Yeah.
It's a one duck rule. That's like Quack Pack and the Mighty Ducks show. We're like yeah. Years apart. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's gonna wrap up with 70. Have been 75 episodes over 3 seasons. So, and it'll still be on Disney Plus and. Like Disney Channel on demand, if you have that in any capacity, so you still catch up and watch it if you haven't seen it. Which I definitely, even though it's ending, like I think, as long as they wrap it up in like a satisfying way, it's still definitely worth checking out, because it's definitely like one of the best like Disney Channel shows in recent years. Like I would say, definitely up there with like Gravity Falls.
I still gotta watch all of it. I've seen bits and pieces. I've seen just like select episodes that people have talked about, but I haven't seen it from start to finish. But I feel like I could. It's gonna be sad, because as soon as I'm like, yeah, more, I'm like, oh yeah, that was it.
Yeah. So, speaking of Disney Plus and Disney stuff, we got some casting news for Hawkeye, which is one of the upcoming Disney Plus MCU shows. So, yeah, obviously Jeremy Renner's going to be back as Hawkeye / Clint Barton, and Haley Steinfeld is going to be Kate Bishop, who is the new Hawkeye who takes over, which is from the comics, Young Avengers, all that stuff. And then they added Vera Farmiga is going to be Kate Bishop's mother, Eleanor Bishop. And then also Tony Dalton from Better Call Saul, who's like Lalo on Better Call Saul, one of the main villains, is going to be on the show. Florence Pugh is going to be back as her Black Widow character.
So she lives?
I think we have to assume that she lives. Or
it's like a hologram?
Yeah.
See, it's weird that they're doing this casting. Maybe she's a flashback character.
Maybe there's going to be some sort of like, I mean, do we see like Black Widow's funeral or anything? Well, we saw Tony's funeral at Endgame, but like maybe Yelena will show up at like, maybe like Clint will be at the funeral or something. They meet and it's like, oh, hey, you knew my sister or something.
Something to connect it, but it's going to be like, kind of tattered, because you can't have like this epic moment of like the past that it's like seems really like cool and a weird send-off for the Black Widow character to have like this like her own solo venture, but it's like and not really connected to anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just because like I'm kind of disappointed Black Widow didn't come out by now or in some form.
Yeah, May of next year, hopefully. And I think they're shooting Hawkeye right now because there's like set photos, the set photos kind of confirmed that like Haley Steinfeld was kept, because that wasn't officially confirmed yet. That was like highly rumored, but it wasn't confirmed yet. But she was like, there's photos of like her on the set, so it's like, yeah, I think she's playing. Yeah, someone's just like, yeah, I think she's playing Kate Bishop if she's on the set.
And then she just puts on a hood and becomes Spider Gwen.
Yeah. Psych.
You thought this was a Kate Bishop show? It's not. It's Spider-Gwen.
Yeah, I'm not sure when Hawkeye is supposed to debut on Disney Plus. Like, I think everything seems like it's kind of getting pushed back. So this might be like late next year, or maybe late into like 2022 or something.
Because I'm just confused about like. Wasn't the Hawkeye TV show different? Like, the Hawkeye TV show originally for him was kind of like before Endgame.
I don't remember like any sort of like
rumor about that.
Yeah, or like whatever the plot, like with the like early plot stuff or anything.
I kind of remember reading one. It was like it was the years he was Ronin for those 5 years.
Oh, maybe.
You don't remember this?
I don't remember reading anything like specifically like that, but that makes sense.
Yeah, it was like explaining his like it probably ends with him in Japan in that one part. Like that was supposed to like tie up that where he was going around hunting all these people now that Clint Barker was just like not an Avenger and he's just like angry.
Yeah.
So I thought that was gonna happen.
Well, I think it's heavily inspired by like the like most recent Hawkeye runs where like he's deaf and then Kate Bishop shows up and everything, so it's gonna be like recent Hawkeye stuff is gonna be the most like the inspiration, like the like story beats probably. But yeah, that'll be sometime in the future on Disney Plus. We got WandaVision finally coming in January. Then I think Winter Soldier and Falcon is like the summer next year or something now, or like spring maybe. Yeah, so hopefully these MCU shows start rolling out next year. We can see if they're as good as like The Mandalorian. So, actually, speaking of streaming services, are you ready for another one, Chris?
Oh, boy.
Discovery Plus is coming.
Just, like, a weird time to just join the streaming wars.
Yeah, so all your favorite Discovery Channel shows are coming along with... So, well, actually, the Discovery family of networks. So it's, like, HGTV, Food Network, TLC... ID, which is Investigation Discovery, Oprah Winfrey Network, Animal Planet, and then regular Discovery Channel are all going to be on this one streaming service. Oh, and also like History and Lifetime and Do It Yourself Network and Science Channel and Travel Channel. And it's going to be $5 a month for a version with ads, and I think $8 a month for a version without ads. And it's launching with, like, pretty much the entire back catalog of every single show that has ever been on any of those networks. 2,500 plus shows, 55,000 episodes at launch.
Okay. I mean, it's nice. It's just a little aggressive. And then kind of, like, I always thought they would be paired up with someone else, not just, like, Discovery, and it's all, like, Discovery Network.
It doesn't really seem like they have any like exclusives. It's just gonna be like, hey, do you want to watch back like the back catalog of Discovery Network shows? Here you go.
Yeah, that's the part where I'm like, oh, it's just like, oh, did you miss it on TV? Well, do you want to wait a week and then you can watch it later on streaming?
Yeah. I guess maybe that would like it would eliminate like the having to like have a cable service, because like all these networks, like if you download like their separate apps right now, you have to have a cable service to like use them, or you get two episodes of every show. That's it.
Yeah, so it's like not really a benefit, because all you do is like still pay for cable. Like it still wants you to have cable, so you can't completely go offline. Like you can't cut the cord. Like you have to be related somewhere to cable.
Well, they want you to pay like their cable, which is the subscription. But yeah, I mean, if you want to watch like all of like Diners, Drivers, and Dives or something, then now you can.
I wouldn't mind that. I think again, there's like certain shows that make sense. That's like, oh, you're a fan, you like it. I wouldn't mind seeing Guy Fieri. You know, but the other shows, I'm like, yeah, but that's just like, you know, that's a personal taste, but that's not like a mass, everyone's going to get onto that, you know, like that's not a popular opinion.
Oh, so they are going to have exclusives, but they're not really saying what the exclusives are. So there will be some sort of like exclusive shows in the future if this works out, I guess.
That's fine. They see that's good. Oh,
actually, I'm not looking. There are a couple, like Bobby Flay and Giada are going to Italy. That's an exclusive show.
Ugh.
Or like 90 Day Fiance Diaries. Mysterious Planet.
Yeah, no, like it shows that like start blurring together. I'm not sure if they know their fan base.
Yeah.
Like they're just shooting for, like, what's hot. It's like, if Bobby Flay's still in, Giada's still in, let's just make them go on a trip.
I feel like they should maybe have gone, like, this Peacock route and had, like, a free tier with ads, and then you pay to get rid of the ads. Like,
yeah.
$5 for, like warmed up for Discovery Channel shows, or, like, Discovery Network shows with ads. Like, that's not compelling. You might as well just get Sling or something, and then you basically get the same thing, but you get a ton of channels. And I think a bunch of them are like, I don't know, like, I wonder if they're gonna like take them off, because I think a bunch of those shows are on Hulu right now, and other streaming services. Is Discovery gonna like pull all their shows from like the other streaming services and be like, they're only Discovery Plus shows now?
Yeah. I don't know what they're gonna do. Like, it's like, oh, is this your favorite show? You have to pay for the service to watch it now.
Yeah. We watch Guy's Grocery Games.
Guess what? Now it's Guy's Grocery Game online.
Yeah. So yeah, but that's launching early next year, so we'll have to see if that is a success or if it pulls a Quibi and fails spectacularly.
Even if it lasted a little bit longer, it still would never be a Quibi.
Yeah.
Because to them, they're not paying for that much exclusive content. You know, it's all the things they already own.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't make that much money, they'll just like put it back on like the regular networks.
Yeah.
But like Quibi was like a whole different monster that like should not have been thought out more.
I don't think Discovery Plus is paying like $1.5 billion for like insane shows that no one wants to watch.
That money that went into Quibi could have been used for such better reasons, and it's just like, oh, it's only for like 5-minute TV shows.
We need to fund the show where they blow up food and they have chefs try to like eat the scraps and figure out what the food was.
Is that a real show?
That was a Quibi show.
I thought you were bullshitting. I'm like, I can see that, but you're like, that's a real show?
Yeah. Or Murder House Flip.
That was a cool idea, but I feel like that's like a home, like that shouldn't be on Quibi.
Yeah. Well, outside of like the first like 5-minute episode where they're like walking around and like describing where the murders happened, like it just turns like the rest of the episodes of that show were just like a regular like HGTV show where it's just like, and here's we're gonna like put we're gonna like open floor plan and like all the buzzwords of like the sideshows where it's like, here you go, here's your new murder house. The show should have been like way more insane than it was.
Well, yeah, the way you described it, because you had the how did you watch? Did you watch Quibi?
Well, I got it when I first launched because they were doing like that. You got 3 months for free.
Right. Okay. So I
figured I'd be like, all right, I'll watch it and see what this is for 3 months or whatever.
So, I mean, that was the thing. It's like Quibi shows were passed word of mouth because you couldn't share anything, and then YouTube was like cracking down on Quibi clips until they were like, no one's fighting against them, so whatever.
Yeah, that's a big reason that Quibi died, is like no one could, like, you couldn't, if they'd let you like share clips or share like GIFs or anything, like then people would be like, oh, this crazy show on Quibi with like Rachel Brosnahan has a golden arm, I gotta watch that.
I also heard that was terrible. Like, the guys from Mr. Sunday Movie and Auntie Donna, like, reviewed it and were just, like, bashing that thing to hell.
The Sam Raimi show?
Yeah, which was, like, really disappointing because I forgot that was a thing. Relearned that it was a thing.
Yeah, Sam Raimi directed that Golden Arm episode.
And it was like, it was supposed to be it's their version of like Hulu's Halloween horror, because it's supposed to be like stories from every part of the
it was like
world,
it was like,
or states.
Every state had their own like horror like story or something. But then it wasn't even like, it didn't even feel like, or like it didn't seem like it was even like, because like if it was like, oh, this is like an urban legend that's like specific to like the state, that would have been cool. That would have been like a cool idea. But then it
that
was
makes
like,
too much sense.
But then it was like Kansas is like, oh, Kansas, like, we're gonna make a story about the biggest ball of twine that has no urban legends or horror stories related to it. It's just a big ball of twine in this town.
Was it a horror show?
Yeah, it's like they made it so like the world's biggest ball of twine was like this like thing that like infected the entire town with twine, and they all became twine monsters. And then they fed new people to the twine ball to make it like grow bigger.
Okay, that makes sense.
But yeah, it's like, but like, there's no like urban legends about the twine ball eating people. Like, so it's like, where did this idea come from? Like, there's nothing, there's like literally nothing else in Kansas that you could like make a horror story about. You have to do the biggest ball of twine. I don't know. We talked about Quibi. Quibi is officially dead, so we don't need to talk about it anymore. It's 1,000% dead. But so moving on to other stuff, we've got some news this week that there's a new Van Helsing movie on the way, although probably not related to the Hugh Jackman version that we got almost 20 years ago.
Can't believe it's been that much.
Yeah, 2004 is when that movie came out. So, but yeah, James Wan is producing a new version of the Van Helsing character. Julius Avery, who directed Overlord, is directing it. And no kind of like idea like what the tone is or what it like if it's like what it's based on or if it's based on anything. I'm assuming it's probably gonna be maybe like a more like Invisible Man style like mod maybe like a modern Van Helsing or something or like.
I'll be down for that. Like
definitely more. I'm sure it's probably gonna be definitely more streamlined and serious than the insanity of the Hugh Jackman Van Helsing.
Right, right. I mean, listen. Van Helsing with Hugh Jackman was it's fun to think it is a weird like it's almost in the same family as like the Mummy series, yeah. The, like Brendan Fraser.
I mean, same director Steven Summers directed all those movies basically. Did he direct the last Mummy movie like the third one?
I don't know.
Did he bail at that point?
He's just like, oh man, this is too much for me. But I wouldn't be surprised. And the thing is, his movies have that dumb charm to it, you know, like some fun aspects to it. But I don't know if it could happen again, especially if it's more serious. I want it more modern. I would like to see a new modern take on that.
Yeah, I'd like to see like a modern Van Helsing kind of like investigating some sort of like monster or something. Like,
yeah. You know what's really cool about the. I mean, not too much, but that Dracula Untold movie was, like, the modern ending, where it's, like, you know...
Yeah, like, the first tease of the Dark Universe that didn't happen. Because that ending was supposed to be, like, and now we're in the modern Monsterverse.
Like, and now the game begins, and you're like, yeah. Cool! And the game instantly was over.
But, yeah, I mean, Overlord was... A pretty awesome, was an awesome movie, so definitely excited to see what Julius Avery can do with Van Helsing.
I like the idea. I like it's very classic. It's safe, you know. It's not a too crazy an idea. Just Van Helsing, a guy that hunts vampires. Are they gonna make him an angel? Like, that part. Are they gonna do the whole?
Is he gonna have a machine gun crossbow?
Yeah. Is there like a thing to like? A Belmont or whatever, like whatever they couldn't use the word Belmont.
So oh my god, yeah. Is everyone gonna have like Transylvanian accents? Quote unquote.
Yeah, who knows?
Everyone besides Hugh Jackman in that movie had like a crazy accent. Like Kate Beckinsale's accent was out of control.
Oh yeah. I forget like that she's British. And that movie makes it seem like she's an American person trying to be a Eastern European accent.
Yeah. But yeah, let's see what goes on with this Van Helsing. I don't think it has a release date or anything, but it's getting added to like the slate of like James Wan movies that he's producing. So, which James Wan is like turning into like he's just producing everything now.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm no longer making things, but I will throw money at things.
Yeah. So, we also got some crazy news about the Toxic Avenger reboot that's coming from, I believe, Legendary Pictures is rebooting Toxic Avenger. And Peter Dinklage is going to star in the movie.
I mean, cool.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely interesting casting. And yeah, it's going to be a I think it's going to be kind of in the vein of like Deadpool or something. It's definitely going to be a higher budget than any of the other like the previous Troma movies. Lloyd Kaufman is a producer on it, but he's not directing it. Legendary Pictures directing it, producing it. And then yeah, Peter Dinklage is going to star as I don't know if he's gonna if they're like going full like if it's full on like if he's gonna be What's Taxi's like original name? Melvin?
Something? Yeah, something like that. Something super nerdy.
Yeah, like yeah, they're going like the like exact same origin or anything, but.
I mean, we as a fan of like schlocky horror, it's fun, but is it gonna make like if they present it as a like tongue-in-cheek movie, all about it. Yeah. If they try to make it like a too retro comedy where it's like, whoa, did you remember this from like 30 years ago? Taxi's back. Like,
remember the 80s?
Yeah, I'm not down for that. Actually, I would like to see them make an 80s movie now. Like, try to recreate that movie.
I mean, there's a bunch of people doing that, but...
But have they done it well?
I mean, all the like, retro 80s, like Stranger Things and stuff...
Yeah, that like, was like a, that, but that's, like, original to some degree. Some parts were, like, you know, homages, but... Yeah. I mean, yeah, if they make a Stranger Things, like, shot for shot... I mean, not a shot for shot, but, like... If they follow that formula of just keep it in the error, have it be silly and stupid, I think the original fans won't be like, oh no, like, what are you doing? But it's also a franchise that no one thought would ever be back.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely like, I've never met a hardcore Toxic Avenger fan. I think Toxic Avenger fans are just happy if there's more Toxic Avenger, so it doesn't matter what it is.
Mm-hmm. And so this new Toxic Avenger is also going to be directed by Macon Blair, who he directed the Netflix movie I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore. And he also he co-starred in Blue Ruin, the Jeremy like Soliday movie. He was the executive producer on it.
He's definitely in the
indie genre film like arena and like indie comedy world because I think I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore is like a like indie comedy like dark comedy sort of thing.
I see. Yeah, once it's on Netflix, it's not like that indie anymore.
And then Blue Ruin was like a pretty dark like revenge movie.
I haven't seen Blue Ruin.
Yeah, that was the one. That was the one that Jeremy Saulnier did before Green Room.
Oh. I always thought he did that one where it's like it was like cannibals on an island.
I don't know.
I always confuse Green Room with like something else that's green.
There's Green Inferno, which is an Eli Green Roth Inferno. Movie.
Yeah, I always confused. Somehow I confused those two movies.
I think they were kind of around the same time. Oh, and Jeremy Saulnier, he also directed that Hold the Dark movie on Netflix. The one with Jeffrey Wright. It was like he was trying in Alaska and stuff. And it was like wolves killing children. So yeah, who knows what hopefully the tone is like more kind of like Deadpool style, but yeah, it could be some weird like dark indie movie take on like Toxic Avenger.
Yeah, either way, down for
yeah, definitely interesting. I think the first trailer would definitely like tell us the tale for that movie if we see what the first trailer of that movie is like. But yeah, I think that is. I don't think that really has a release date yet either. I don't think that like it's kind of too early to say when that movie's gonna come out. So, but I mean, if they cast their star with Peter Dinklage, I think it's probably getting close to like maybe getting underway soon or something.
I mean, this COVID thing's still around, so it's not exactly like easy to make a movie lately.
Yeah, unless you go to like New Zealand or something, where there's no COVID. So, last bit of news for this week is that we got a released opening date for Super Nintendo World, which is going to open February 4th next year in Japan, Universal Studios Japan. And there was all sorts of like new photos and video about what the park's going to look like and the rides and everything. So, did you see any of that stuff, Chris?
I did. It looks great. It looks like almost like a video game. The world is definitely coming alive. It looks like the best Nintendo store I've ever seen.
There's definitely going to be Nintendo stores, and there's going to be tons of exclusive, like, usually only stuff you could buy, I'm sure. It's very, even though it's Super Nintendo World, like, I think it's going to be possibly open to, like, expanding later, but, like, this first area is definitely, it's all Mario. It's all Super Mario World. The main attraction is Mario Kart Koopa's Challenge, which I think people were kind of expecting it to be like an actual like go kart that you're able to drive yourself, but it seems like it's gonna be just like a roller coaster, but it's gonna have like you put AR goggles on, and it's gonna like basically like overlay like a Mario Kart track on top of everything.
That's cool. Yeah, the big thing of roller coasters to like spice them up is like AR goggles now.
Yeah.
So that's, or like virtual reality goggles.
And then there's also going to be some sort of Yoshi ride where everyone gets up on board a Yoshi and then you go on some sort of like indoor dark ride sort of thing.
Now, my big concern is like, you know, obviously we don't speak Japanese, but if we go in, is something's partially translated? Or it's just like the character speak. Like I'm always concerned about. Like I'm always weird. Wonder about those kind of rides in that world because Mario speaks English in some of the like games, and then they kind of just do a rough translation. So when you go to Mario World, he's like, "It's me, Mario. Welcome to my world." Is that just like replace aggressively with like a, you know, with natively the Japanese language? And you're like, "Where am I?"
I think what I've seen from like. Other like Disney like the Chinese Disney parks and stuff. I think they expect like because Disney and Universal are like they're like I mean like global
markets like, right
global it's global park global property like I think a lot of it is in like multi, like all signs I think are I think in like multiple languages definitely or definitely at least English and like the native language. I think maybe the on-ride audio might be like Japanese, but I think like a lot of the signage
story
and all
or,
stuff
yeah.
is like English and whatever language which it says it would be Japanese. So
I always wonder that because you know Mario game like Nintendo games don't like especially Mario games they don't speak a lot. You know like there's not like a heavy dialogue, but when you get into like a ride, there's like a story. So like I want to know how that pre-show is gonna work. I don't know. I'm just interested because, you know, it's a really big concept. Really excited to see that being happening. I just want to know also what kind of food they're going to make later on. You know, like you go there and get like a magic mushroom.
Oh, I think they did show off like some like the food that you were going to like you'd be able to like eat there.
Okay, obviously I did not read all of the articles because I totally missed this. I only saw like highlights then. I guess just like some of the walk around stuff.
They had Nintendo, like a Mario Cafe they showed off, and it's gonna have like there is it's like a I think they're waffle like waffles or like it's like it's a pancake that's like it looks like Mario's hat, and it's filled with like strawberries and whipped cream.
That's cool.
And then they're gonna have like milkshakes where like when the straws are gonna have like mustaches on them, so like, when you're sipping the milkshake, it's gonna have like it looks like you have a Mario mustache. There's like a Mario and like Luigi version of that. I think that's the only they only showed like a couple. They showed like the milkshakes and like the pancake thing so far, but I think there's like definitely gonna be like multiple restaurants. I think. It looks like they actually had like it's gonna be at least part of the area is looks like. It kind of looks like New Dog City.
Okay.
Odyssey, where it's like a kind of like a New York City style street. There's like a pharmacy and like a 1 hour photo place and stuff. So. But yeah, definitely it's just like I definitely want to see like excited to see some like on ride photo like video and stuff when it opens and see like what the actual like the Koopa like challenge ride is and stuff. And then hopefully it'll be in Florida and Hollywood soon. That's the plan. Is like it's gonna be sometime soon. There'll be versions at like Universal Florida and Universal Hollywood.
Eventually.
Yeah. Well, I think it's in Florida. It's gonna be part of like because they're opening like basically a third park, Epic Universe. It's gonna have Nintendo Land, and I think also like a Universal Monster Land, and then some sort of other Harry Potter land, and I think it was maybe a Minions thing or something, or like a Minions or Illumination land or something.
I thought there was a ride already with them.
There's a 4D movie Minions I think it's like right when you walk in, it's like one of the first things you like see on like when you walk in is like the Minions like theater. It's like Shrek and it's like the Shrek movie and like the Minions movie are like right across from each other.
You know, I haven't been to Universal in a while, so it's like when I go there and be like, whoa, this is all new. It's like this movie came out 5 years ago. I'm like, new. Super new to me.
Yeah. But yeah, it's basically this new park is actually it's gonna be like down the street a little bit from like the main park. Like it's not gonna be in the same area as like I was at Adventure Universal. You have to like drive down like they're like Universal Boulevard to get to like this new park.
You have to go to like a whole different park.
Yeah, it's gonna be like Epcot or like Animal Kingdom where they're like it's like totally separate from like the other parks. So it's like a 5 minute drive down the road or something.
Makes sense. I mean, there's so much space you can cram in Tokyo.
Well, this is like the Florida.
Oh, even then, like. There's so much space in Orlando too. The last time you've been there, like I think they demolished like parking lots and they had to like buy up more businesses around.
Yeah, they had to buy a ton of land to do like this new park. But February next year we'll see what. I'm sure there'll be like tons of video and tons of information, like what everything you can do at Super Mario World or Super Nintendo World. So definitely keep an eye out on February for a lot of stuff. Just like this, like the brief glimpse they showed, though. I mean, it looks amazing. It looks like you're like stepping into like the games.
I'm excited.
So that's pretty much it for news this week, so why don't we jump into show and tell. And Chris, did you see anything over the last week or so here?
Saw a couple of things.
Okay.
I saw the Christmas Chronicles 1 and 2.
Oh, both. Okay.
I did. I saw back to back.
Did you see the first one you came out, or is this the first time you saw both?
That's the first time I saw both, really.
Okay.
So it was just like watching both of them. I like the first one better.
Yeah, I haven't seen two yet, but yeah, one is definitely fun. Like, I mean, if it wasn't Kurt Russell, I think it would be like super forgettable. Like, it'd just be like a forgettable kind of like random Christmas movie. But like, yeah, but Kurt Russell like carries that movie by the shoulders and makes it like a super like it's like super fun. Like, just all everything he's like he's just like the reason to see that both movies. I would imagine.
Yeah, he's the person that holds up the franchise.
Yeah. Cool Santa.
Yeah, cool Santa with like an attitude and has like a little bit of like a fun mischievous side.
Yeah.
Even though I've got questions about how the Santa rule works, and then is he just not monitored or anything for losing his stuff? Or not to spoil much about the first Christmas Chronicles, but it sort of makes it seem like he planned all of the events ahead of time.
Yeah,
right. Is that the thing about the movie?
I don't know. Just to help like this like this like one brother and sister.
He gambled on these siblings to teach them the spirit of Christmas. To basically, I don't know, like show them Santa is real and stuff. Like it could have gone wrong so many ways in this planning. Mm-hmm. But it worked. Then then we get like the second movie where it's like a few years later, like 2 years later, and it's about the little girl this time, because she's starting to lose the belief. But then, oh my god, what Christmas monsters? It's like Belschnickel.
Yeah, Belschnickel. Yeah,
Belschnickel is like the villain, because years ago he like was greedy, so like the I don't know, it's like this weird Christmas curse or whatever. But it, because he was greedy, he turned into the one thing he didn't like, which was humans. So he became human. But then they don't say how long he's been human for. He complains it's been a while, but it seems like he's immortal. Like, it.
Yeah.
I don't know. At this point, they're just not following the rules. The movie slowly becomes like a kid's movie, and that's what that part I don't like. I'm not going to spoil it, yeah, because it's definitely worth watching to understand where I stand on it, too, where I say, like, it's a very weak Christmas movie, because it's just like the power of friendship solves everything movie, where the first movie wasn't that. It was just like, oh, like, believe in yourself and like show by example, and like Santa's like a cool guy, you know. And this movie, it's like, just believe. Oh, why is this happening? Because, all right.
Yeah, it's like this Santa's gonna drink a beer and play some blues.
Yeah, like the parts I like about Santa Chronicles was when he interacts with like the normal humans, like the regular people, and he's like calling out, like he can tell what they wanted, and he just like whips out toys.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Did you enjoy that?
Yeah.
Because that is not in the second movie. Like none of that.
I kind of figured because like the second one is like exclusively at the North Pole.
Yep. I mean, there's other moments in it that's like kind of cool, but they don't explore it hard enough.
There's the Yule cat or something that's like Santa's trying to murder.
Well, he's trying to hunt him because the Yule cat is like prowling around. But I mean, yeah. So they introduce the concept of other like famous creatures existing, but they don't go in it too hard. Like they just kind of just lightly touch on it just enough and then just stop. And I'm like, oh, come on. Like, you can go more. Like, I want to see more of this world. So they hold back on it. So I hope there's a third part three. I don't know. I kind of want to see more of it. Like, you know, like Santa Claus 2 or 3 where they introduced Jack Frost and then the other holiday people?
I think that was 3 because Jack Frost was like the main villain of 3.
Okay, so, you know, like, that, they took its time to kind of build up to that. But this, they really wait. Like, they really wait to show you more of the world and stuff. And I just think that, basically, they should kind of interact with more mystical things and try to explain their things. So it's not just the Christmas Chronicles. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of, it kind of, like, plays on familiar territory. And the second one just, like, super familiar. And I'm like, I've seen this movie. It's like, you've seen this movie, it's just that you saw it finally in this version, you know?
Yeah.
It's
Kurt Russell instead of, like, Tim Allen.
Yeah! Except that now you get to pay attention to, like, these other characters who, like, I just didn't care about. And they introduce, Tyrese Gibson's in this one?
I saw bits of it, yeah.
And it's really random. You're like, oh, and he's in it for, like, 5 minutes. He's there for a vacation.
Yeah. He's pulling an Adam Sandler. I'm just like, oh, I get to go to like the Caribbean or whatever you guys are filming this. All right.
Yeah, I'll be in this.
Just shoot 10 minutes. I get like a week in like the Caribbean. All right.
Oh no, it's such hard work. I'll take my my check cashed today.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm just dissing it because I saw it back to back. I imagine. If you saw it in some break, well, like you, because you probably don't need to see the first one, but I saw, after seeing the second one, I was like, I liked the first one a lot more, only because it's more of a, it has a very interesting plot, it has a very interesting set of dilemmas, where in this one, you kind of know it's not going to be so bad, and you've seen this movie play out a lot, But they introduced something really wild, which I'm not gonna spoil, but it's something where I'm like, wow, that's a really cool concept, and then like, and it's over. Like, wait, what? Go back. It's like beyond the like mystical characters. Even though that still plays, it's just like, okay, well, that's a cool concept. Like, why is not that not like a good part of the movie? That's introduced so far along, and then it's quickly like just a plot device they just throw away. I'm like, you can't. That's like a whole different movie. Like, you can't just use that. Mm-hmm. But again, it's nothing that the movie, like, every actor's good in it for a kid's movie. You know, it's just more like I'm very picky about my plot, and this plot is just like a lot of filler and then awesome setup that just doesn't get paid off.
Yeah.
Okay.
I kind of felt like from the trailer that the two was gonna be maybe like a little bit more like
a weaker entry.
Yeah. Cause definitely like you said, like the first one, the fun of it was like cool Santa and like wandering around like Chicago or whatever without his sled or any of his magical stuff, just like interacting with like random people.
Yeah, really
getting
fun.
Getting arrested and doing Kurt Russell stuff, like.
But then it just kind of drops the ball. Mm-hmm. That's the part I'm like, oh boy. So there's a theme with that where I watched it, like, cool concept drops the ball. I saw Tenet.
Oh.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Really cool concept.
Mm-hmm.
Wastes a lot of time showing stuff that like you just don't need. Cause this is Christopher Nolan's sci-fi Bond movie. Like, it's just like perfectly makes sense. It's shot well, it's set up well, it feels like a Bond movie. There's like really cool nods to the spy thriller because of like this super secret like agency of Tenet, and then was it John Washington? He does a really great job trying to portray this like American, or not American, but like a great like operator in this secretive world that is just like, oh, it's like high stakes, international travel, like the like ultimate weapon is kind of at stake. So yeah, it's like a Bond movie in that sense. However, and I think this is like what critics were saying that like understood it finally after watching it, it's a movie that like sets it up correctly but then goes beyond more than it has to. And if you saw how like Inception was, where it's a very high concept, very exposition heavy, where they need to explain every little step.
Mm-hmm.
This movie does the opposite, where it's like they don't try to explain much because they don't want to ruin the set pieces and the twist, because it's one of those movies that is going to try to mess with your mind. But the moment you understand it, you're just like, wait, then why are they doing all these extra steps? And it's like, oh, that's because no one wants to be more complicated. And it's not even a great, like, oh, that's a great technical marvel. It's like, oh, that's because no one wants to throw you off. But it's like, I already figured that prediction out halfway through. I've been paying attention. It doesn't hide it well. Like, it doesn't hide the bigger. So it does. There's some other twists that, again, won't spoil because it's like still worth seeing. I rented it, so I was like, all right, like, I'll bite the bullet to finally rent this. And I enjoyed it, but I enjoyed it as like a movie person than a average moviegoer. Like, as someone who enjoys Nolan's movies and wanted to see this just to say I saw it, it's a great, you know, sci-fi spy thriller. But it's not going to appeal to a lot of people who just want to throw on a movie and just like get lost in an action film, because, oh my God, there's a lot of random talking. And here's the thing. The talking is not about like the Tenet part. And the Tenet part is like, you know, there's like there's sort of like a science of like forward motion and inverse motion. And that's the whole thing about Tenet, is that certain people are like, there's certain things that are like always happening in a linear way, and then there's a way that's like reversal of a linear order. And then when you cross them, that's where like things start clashing.
So that's why the plot can be explained easily, because it's like they don't want to show you like certain things, certain people, certain items are like different motion. Like they did the bullet trick, right, where they shot the bullet went back in the gun.
Mm-hmm.
So there are other things in the world that isn't just the bullet that could do that, because it's like predestined, sort of. We're like, oh, the bullet that you use is always empty, but the moment you pull the trigger, like the actual bullet from where you shot is going to go back into the casing. And they're like, okay, that kind of makes sense, because that kind of proves like predestined, you know, like things are bound to happen because of like how things are moving in time forward and backwards. But then it's a movie where like, and also this is not even like a joke. One of the characters just says, don't think about it.
It's like Avengers Endgame, where it's just like, don't worry about the time travel stuff.
Yeah. One character says, don't think too hard. Like it's too much to think. Just like feel. I'm like, is this the Austin Powers line that they use? Don't think about it, enjoy the movie. You know, it's that attitude. And I was like, oh my God, did Christopher Nolan just cop out of this moment?
Mm-hmm.
So not a big fan of that. But for a moviegoer, like as a person who enjoys the, the cinema shots and the like set piece of it, it's not bad, because there's some parts that are like well shot. Like there's a lot of thought into it. There's a lot of fun things that they did with setting up the reversal, like these really complicated shots. But if you're thinking about logically, like sort of how time travel works and time reversal, it's a movie that falls upon itself. Like it just gets too pretentious, and you're like, why did it show me this much? Like you should not have shown me this much of the movie, because now I've got so many questions. You know, like that's not a movie shouldn't do that. We're like, stop. Like, don't show me this, because I don't want to know. Now it's like, oh, fuck, Nolan's trying to explain it. Like, oh, God, why would you do this? So that's why I'm like,
I'll probably see it in a couple weeks when it comes out. Wider
release, it's okay.
And then maybe when I see it, we can talk about spoilers.
Oh, definitely. Like I'm trying to avoid talking so much about it, because it's a movie that's really hard to talk about without explaining like the main concept, because the movie takes its time dragging its feet telling that part.
Yeah.
But you learn so much about other characters that I'm like, I guess like you learn about these people's like taste and like problems that I'm like, how's this playing? Like there's like a subplot that happens that I can't even figure out like why this is a problem, because like, you know, it's like a bad guy doing something bad. I'm just like, well, you have no obligations to just like help this bad guy. It's just like, you can just stop and just be like, well, yeah, let the bad guy like say what he wants to say. But then you're like, well, you're a bad guy. Who's gonna believe you? You know, it's just like, I don't understand how this is working.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely watch it when you can. It's definitely a movie to see once, but that's like most Nolan movies. You like need to see it one time to say you saw like this movie experience. Because he does know how to make a good movie experience, but not quite like a rewatch. You know. I feel like those directors, like even 1917, like it's a movie you don't want to watch again recently, right? It's a movie that you watch once and you're like, wow, it's exhausting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's some. I mean, obviously the Batman trilogy, you watch it like over and over and over again.
Yes, Nolan. Yes.
And like Prestige, I think you can like definitely watch like every time you watch that one, you kind of get like more.
There's like a few things that's very ambitious about it.
Yeah.
And that's what I liked in the beginning, but then like the ambition parts are the setup shots and not really the plot, and that's the problem. Like that's, I think that again, if I want to simplify what I'm saying, it's that the plot is not strong enough, but the setup shots are great, because there's a lot of things that you could tell is he's carrying in his years of experience of making these movies and then trying to do something different, or he's trying to pay a wider range to different genres, like a spy thriller and sci-fi movie. But it's like, if you want to see that movie, Inception is like the better of the two. Because it's like the same thrill, and it's like a high concept, but easy to understand once you kind of see it in motion. And it leaves a question in your head that can't really be solved so easily, like done perfectly. Where in this, a lot of people found like, okay, well everyone kind of did their own, like, I definitely like watched a bunch of YouTube videos trying to explain like the theories and the like explanations, and every one of them, it always leads to the same, it's like everyone had the same conclusion of like, we don't know why this happens, and no one knows. And if you're kind of follow this logic, no one knows why this happens. And I'm like, whoa, like, that's a problem in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Nolan's going to make like another cut where it's like he removes a scene or he alters a scene. It's like, I don't know how this works. So, yeah, that's what I saw. Oh, and I've been watching a lot of The Mandalorian.
It's been awesome.
It has. And I think I'm one episode away from episode 5.
Oh, so you haven't seen the Jedi episode yet?
No, I have seen the Jedi. Is that it? Am I up?
You're caught up then.
Holy shit. I thought I wasn't.
If you saw the Ahsoka episode, then yeah, you're caught up.
I thought, like, it's more. I thought, like, Ahsoka, like travels with the Mandalorian. If not, then I definitely just finished episode 5, so I guess I'm on track.
Yep. So I saw, actually, we were speaking of Tenet a little bit ago. I saw the movie that came out before Tenet when theaters kind of reopened a little bit in the summer. I saw Unhinged finally.
Of the movies you wanted to watch, you saw Unhinged.
Well, I got Netflix sent it to me, so I watched it. It's fine. It's if you want to see Russell Crowe just like go on a rampage and be like a crazy murderer in a car for a movie. It definitely feels sort of in the vein of like a Phone Booth or something, or like one of those kind of movies. Even though the character isn't trapped in like one location for the whole movie, but it's sort of in that vein of it's like you're in the situation you can't get away from. But basically, the setup is that Russell Crowe is this crazy, mentally unhinged guy who, within the first 5 minutes of the movie, like, he goes to like his ex-wife's house and kills her and her boyfriend and blows up their house.
Ooh.
And then he drives away. Apparently he's been driving, like, that happens at, like, I guess early morning or like at night. But apparently he's been just driving around New Orleans for like the entire night or day or whatever. Because basically, like, the next morning, like, there's this single mom and her son are, like, trying to get to school, and they're caught in traffic, and then basically, like, they're stuck behind Russell Crowe's character in his, like, truck, and he's, like, not going for a green light, so it's, like, this mom, Rachel, like, honks at him, and then he, like, finally pulls up, and then they kind of, like, get stuck in traffic again, and they're, like, side by side now, so then, like, Russell Crowe was, like, kind of, like, opens it. He opens his window and starts like talking to her and like being like, "You're gonna apologize for honking at me?" And then she's like, "No, because you were gonna go for a green light, you asshole." So they basically get into a fight in the middle of the road, and like then Russell Crowe basically like becomes like fixated, like trying to like destroy her entire life, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you get cut off in traffic while you're crazy, just might as well go all in on it.
It's definitely like there's the whole like credits is this whole like montage of like road rage incidents and stuff. It's just like, is road rage getting worse? Are we getting more and more angry?
Are we getting more unhinged?
Yeah. But yeah, and then basically at some point, like, so Russell Crowe's character is like stalking this woman around New Orleans, and then he eventually stalks her to like a gas station and like manages to steal her cell phone. So then he basically gets all of her contacts and like all of her like address, like, appointment book stuff, so like he knows like all of her contacts, like where they live and like all the everything she was planning to do for the day. So then he basically just starts like systematically like going on like killing everyone like all of her contacts and all of her friends.
Jeez.
He's just like I'm gonna teach you what the true meaning of a bad day is. And so yeah, but there's a lot of like phone booth style, like we're on the phone with each other, like talk, like I'm on the phone threatening you, stuff. And then yeah, and Mr. Quote is like kind of like going around just like brutally murdering people.
And well, Trout didn't make it seem like he traveled that much, but I guess he really went far.
Yeah, he definitely gets to some places and does some stuff. And it definitely, and then I think he did like put like he gained some weight for it, but he also like he's like wearing like a fat suit too. So it's because like, Russell Crowe's character in this movie is a very large man, a very large angry man. But yeah, it's a decent thriller. If you want to see some like angry Russell Crowe, like murdering some people, or if you're into like you know like yeah phone booth or that sort of thing, it's also sort of like a reverse Falling Down, I guess too, because like Falling Down, you were like Michael Douglas's character was like an anti-hero, but now it's basically like, what if that character was like going around like stalking this woman and murdering everyone she knew?
He's like a real anti-hero. He's like basically a villain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
I know he's a villain straight up, but
yeah,
it's definitely a movie that you watch for the villain.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, Russell Crowe is like obviously he's like the biggest name in it. Like, there's also like Jimmy Simpson from like Westworld shows up for a little bit at some point. But like, yeah, I mean Russell Crowe's the headliner. Like, it's all about like his like insane over the top killing and yelling into the phone and like talking about like bad days and like making everyone pay and stuff. So. It would definitely be good, like if it shows up on like HBO or like Netflix or something, it'd be worth watching there. I don't know if you need to rush out to rent it or anything, or rent it digitally or something. Like if it shows up streaming, it's like it'd be like a good solid like Saturday afternoon movie or something, or a weekend afternoon movie or something.
I feel like that's the legacy of this movie later on. It's going to be a great like fun.
It's gonna be on TNT, heavily edited on TNT. All the time.
All because the concept is weird and it's very like the blowing point movie of like a fan's life where it's just like, he's unhinged, so now he's gonna go on a rampage and you watch it for that rampage.
Yeah.
I feel like there was another movie with Halle Berry in it that was like
There was the one where she was like the 911 operator, but then there was a different one where she was like her son got kidnapped or something in the car, right, or something, right. Maybe?
And she was trying to chase down the kidnapper all the time, and no one would help her.
Yeah, very, I think, pretty similar concept. I think there was also, like, a Paul Walker movie called, like, Vehicle 19 or something that was sort of, like, similar. But that I think the gimmick with that one was, like, it was, like, all, like totally in the car, like, you never left the car in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the movie I was talking about was Kidnapped?
Kidnapped, yeah.
Yeah, it's a category of like no one wants to help you movie.
Yeah. Well, I think the touch where like Russell Crowe's character like steals the phone is pretty solid. Like that's like a pretty solid way to, like so that she can't get like the main character like she can't get any help really from anyone because like Russell Crowe has her phone.
Right. No, it's a smart move for like a deranged person.
Yeah, Russell Crowe's character is like he's like psychotic but also like weirdly like tactical and like weirdly like he's able to like set up things like elaborate, like he's able to like kind of like put on like airs of like I'm just a normal guy, like I'm concerned about he goes to, one of the like main character's friends, like he goes to, like meets them at like, a restaurant or something and then it's like, "Oh, I got a call from like Rachel or whatever, and I'm very concerned about her like her mental state."
Oh, come on, stranger, I'll tell you everything. Like, you're dead.
Yeah, like Russell Crowe's like, "Hey, I'm an old friend of hers, and I just talked to her this morning."
Well, I'm her mom, and she never talked about you, but of course I'll trust you.
Yeah. So I watched Unhinged. Also, I checked out, I think there's 4 episodes up so far. I think if you're hearing this, there's like 6 episodes at this point, but, The Wonderful World of Mickey Mouse. on Disney Plus, which you saw like the shorts.
Yeah.
The shorts I think those ended in like 2018. That was the last one. So it's been 2 years since any new shorts. But this is basically Wonderful World of Mickey Mouse is basically the continuation of those shorts, the new style of Mickey Mouse and those new shorts. It's like double the length of the shorts were like kind of 4 or 5 minutes long. These are like 8 minutes long now. So they're longer episodes of Mickey hijinks.
I mean, I like them because the Mickey Mouse ones, they're very like mature. Like they're not super, some of them are kid friendly, but then some parts of like the art and the acting is just like really aggressive.
It really reminds me of like Ren and Stimpy or something.
Yeah, yeah. Which I'm down for.
Yeah, it's like Mickey combined with Ren and Stimpy or something. Yeah, and yeah, all the shorts I've seen so far are pretty awesome. The best if you only have time for one or just want to see one to kind of get a feel like or see what the best one is, like I think the second episode of like of Wonderful Mickey Mouse House of Tomorrow is like the best episode I've seen so far. Because it's basically an homage to like the House of the Future from Tomorrowland and Disneyland. But also like a lot of like just great like gags and like Alan Tudyk's like the voice of the house, and there's a lot of, like it's kind of like it's like very like you've seen the idea before where it's like artificial intelligence is running the house, but it's very like 2001 where it's like the AI goes crazy. It starts like Mickey, Donald, and Goofy are like, stuck in this house where it's just like turning into like a crazy like torturing them and stuff. It's also like the like remember the like that Trials of Horror episode with the Simpsons where Pierce Brosnan was like the voice of the house.
Yep.
It's pretty much that with Mickey. Like they're in this like House of the Future, and at first it's like, oh man, it's awesome. It's like it's giving us like our every need, and then this is like, and then it starts like going overboard like their needs and like force it's like doing everything for them and like forcing them to do things they don't want to do and stuff. So definitely. If you just watch one episode, watch that episode. But all of them have been like pretty great so far. So, and I think they're doing 2 episodes a week until like the 18th is like the last two. So, there's like 6 more episodes coming this month on Disney Plus. Definitely check all those out. And then yeah, I watched a bunch of on HBO actually, HBO Max. I watched a bunch of like kind of like 80s, 90s, and then kind of a little bit into the 2000s action movies. There's a bunch of those out on those services right now. So I saw The Dogs of War, which is a kind of like a weird Christopher Walken action movie. I confused it with McBain, which is like Christopher Walken's other like crazy 80s action movie. Which is not like Gary Busey's character McBain or the Simpsons character McBain. But yeah, it's a like McBain is like a 90s Christopher Walken movie. That's like it's basically like a canon movie. Because that one's like just totally over the top insane with like explosions and stuff. Dogs of War kind of feels like a weird because it came out in 1980. It feels sort of like a missing link between like 70s action and 80s action, because like for most of it it feels like a 70s action movie where it's like kind of like it's not really like there's not a lot of like explosions or like shootouts. It's like it's much more like investigations or like a lot, like the first half of the movie is like Christopher Walken like undercover in like this country like surveilling it mostly, because basically Christopher Walken is a mercenary, and then he gets hired to like like go to like this country called Zangaro, that's like a fake country in Africa, and kind of see if it's possible to overthrow like their dictator General Kimba. So Christopher Walken's character goes there and is like surveilling it, and then he gets arrested by Kimba's forces, and then they get deported from the country. But then the guy who like hired him is like, I'm gonna hire you like since we can't like overthrow it. Kimba, I'll hire you to like overthrow him yourself, and then hire like a team of like get your like team of mercenaries together and like go and like overthrow him, because we want to put like our guy in and then like farm the country for resources.
Okay.
Because like basically
it's not even for a better trade.
Yeah. Because the guy who hires Christopher Walken is basically like he represents some sort of like shady business like company that like wants to like mine like. Like I think think he wants to mine like platinum or something. Like it's, there's like a lot of like platinum like reserves in this country, so they want to like just put like their like they want to put like their own like puppet dictator in, and like then they'll get all the mineral rights to the country.
It's what you do. It's what you do with like third world countries.
So basically, but like for like 2/3 of this movie, it's like a it's very like 70s style. Like it's now it's not slow, but it's like it's not like over the top action. But then the last like half hour is like over the top 80s action because they basically go to this country and like blow the fuck out of this country.
We're here to save you. Bah, 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 bah.
Yeah, like the, like all like and also like Tom Berenger is co-stars in it and like a very like young. Tom Berenger with like a mustache and stuff. Co-stars with Christopher Walken.
He's actually what's his face? The other guy with a famous mustache.
Yeah, I like Tom Selleck or something.
Tom Selleck. Yeah, just like oh.
Kinda, I guess. Yeah, and also like Paul Freeman, aka Belloc from Raiders of the Lost Ark, is also on Christopher Walken's team.
What? He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. But basically, they all get like these like crazy like grenade launcher like rapid fire grenade launchers, and so yeah, like so it's like it's a 70s movie is 70s style action movie until like the last half hour, and then it's like oh yeah, it's the 80s now, guys, and it's like they blow it's explosions everywhere, people getting blown up, like it's like it basically like ushers in like the 80s at the end of this movie where it's just like now this is what action is now, like
is that your daddy's movie?
Yeah, the 70s. This isn't Bullet or something or French Connection. Like, it's like explosion time. So yeah, so it definitely was not what I was thinking it would be, but definitely interesting. Like solid. If we want to see like Christopher Walken as like a mercenary action movie. And then I also saw Actually, speaking of canon movies, I saw Killing Streets, which is not a canon movie, but it's the company that Menahem Golan made after canon. So after he left canon, he made 21st Century Pictures and basically just kept making canon movies after that. Under a new banner, yeah. But Killing Streets is a 21st Century Pictures film starring Michael Paré as twins. And basically, the one Michael Paré is a like agent for like the State Department or like the CIA or so, or like some sort of secret organization in like he's stationed in like Beirut, Lebanon, and he gets captured by like this terrorist group, and then his brother, who is like a basketball coach from like Ohio, like is like. Basically, like the terrorist group makes it seem like the one brother died in like a car bomb because they leave like his dog tags in the car, so everyone's just like, "Oh, your brother's dead." But then like
Coach, does the other brother have like training?
That's the weird thing is like he doesn't like he's a basketball coach. It seems like he doesn't have any sort of like special like his brother is like a like Marine or something or like some sort of like he has like actual like military training. But then like his brother comes to the Beirut is just like a. Oh hi! Like it's like a clueless American like tourist guy, but then somehow like he becomes like the main guy like taking on like the terrorist group with the help of Lorenzo Lamas.
What?
Yeah, so Michael Paré, Lorenzo Lamas, the epic team up you've been dreaming of is in this movie.
Never knew I needed to see this movie now.
Yeah,
so it's pretty like it's like the late '80s Expendables. Or well, early 80s?
I mean, it's only those two guys. So there's no one else in it. So a very small Expendables team of two guys. But yeah, it's
a proto Expendables because this is like action heroes and later things.
Yeah, so Killing Streaks was 1991, so very early 90s. But yeah, definitely in the mold. Like if you've definitely in the mold of like canon. Like I don't think it's as crazy as like their like craziest movies. It's not up to like the level of like Invasion USA or something or like like the missing action movies. But if you're into like the, like canon action, it's definitely in that vein. So it's if you want to check it out, if you want to see Michael Paré and Lorenzo Lamas team up. And then I also saw. Rapid Fire, which is like the Brandon Lee movie which is, I think, from 1992. Which I think this movie he made right before he made The Crow, and then all the tragedies happened. But that was like his, like I think it was like his last movie he finished before The Crow. But yeah, I mean, it's a super solid 90s action movie. Definitely kind of shows like what the potential that we lost with Brandon Lee, because like he's pretty awesome in it. Like he does like a cool fights, pretty cool character. Also, it has Powers Booth in it. It's like Powers Booth is like a actual like good cop. Like it's so weird to see like Powers Booth as like just like a like not as a bad guy, because like as Powers Booth like was like such a great bad guy.
Right.
But yeah, and also like a weird like Brandon Lee's character at least like is trained in martial arts, so it's not like Michael Pare's like basketball coach character
becoming. I know karate. All right, cool. Yeah. Go to war.
Yeah, because like basically like Brandon Lee's character is like he witnesses like this like a Italian gangster like murder like a Chinese gangster, and so basically he becomes like the only witness to, like put this like Italian gangster named Serrano away, but then like. But so like he goes to like Chicago to like testify for the FBI, but the FBI is all like basically everyone he's like at the safe house with is like a corrupt working for Serrano. So then Brandon Lee goes on the run, and like then he like meets up with like he meets like Powers Booth, who's like the Chicago police. The Chicago police are like they're I think they're like kind of looking into Serrano, but they're also looking into like this like Chinese like triad. Like drug shipping business, like basically like, they're like, oh, we'll protect you from like the we'll help you figure out like or like protect you from like the corrupt FBI and Serrano if you like help us, we'll take down like this like drug smuggling operation.
It's also weird that Powers Booth looks like he's a corrupt cop and just like, yeah, you can trust me.
Yeah, like he works out of like a fucking like rundown bowling alley. It's like an abandoned bowling alley is like his like cop headquarters. With like his weird task force.
Was that by choice or was that just like that the police department hated Powers Booth, so they gave him like the shittiest like precinct, which is like that's like a like Brooklyn Nine-Nine like joke.
lots of fun Brandon Lee like martial arts stuff, some cool like there's like a like he rides like a motorcycle inside like an art gallery at one point, and then like the whole like final fight is pretty awesome, where like he fights like Zima, who's like you probably most recently saw as like Mulan's dad in the new Mulan. This is like young 90s Zima. And they have a crazy fight where like they're like fighting like between like the subway lines, and they have these metal poles, and they're like trying to like avoid like the electrical rail, the subway line stuff.
Does he look convincing as like a fighter, an actor that knows how to fight?
Yeah, I mean, it's a solid fight. And also, it's huge, like, at the end of it, like, it's, like, the whole, like, because, like, the whole, like, drug smuggling operation, like, is, like, operating out of, like, a laundry, like, facility, and that, so, like, the whole, like, laundry, like, facility is, like, burning to the ground in the finale and stuff. So, just a solid 90s action movie, if you want, with Brandon Lee, so definitely worth checking out if you want to see that. And the last thing is, speaking of martial arts, I saw Kiss of the Dragon, the Jet Li classic from 2001, same year as The One, so a pretty big year for Jet Li in America. But yeah, fun, super fun Jet Li movie. I was reading they were specifically trying to like not have like a lot of CG or wire work going on, because like it was like post Matrix, but like Jet Li was like, we're not gonna do like crazy wire stuff or like crazy CG or anything. Right. It's just gonna be like straight old school, like straight regular like martial arts action.
But I mean, there's some parts where it's like a little bit of wire work.
Well, I think the like I was reading like the only like wire work was that like at the, so like one of the guys he fights, do you remember there's like the blonde twins?
Yep, that's Wirework.
Yeah, because the one twin like Ciro Raffelli, he was kicking so fast that the camera could not pick it up, so he had to like use Wirework to slow down his kicks. He and Jet Li were like kicking, like moving so fast the camera could not detect it. So they had to use wires to slow them down so they could actually like pick it up on the cameras.
I believe like one of like the smaller of the twins, that guy you're mentioning, I think he was also like in Mortal Kombat.
Ciro Raffelli was in, he's in a bunch of like Luc Besson movies. Like he's like a regular like Luc Besson character, like guy. He showed up in like Wasabi and the Transporter and District B-13 and Ronin and stuff. He was the fight choreographer for the Tekken movie.
Oof.
he was one of the henchmen in Live Free or Die Hard.
Yeah, yeah, he's the guy that jumps out the helicopter.
Yeah. But yeah, their fight at the end of that of Kiss of the Dragon is pretty awesome. I mean all the action in Kiss the Dragon is pretty awesome. Like the kind of the opening where like Jelly is trying to like get out of the hotel because like the cops have like betrayed him.
French police.
Yes. That whole sequence is super awesome, and it ends with like the trailer shot of like he like kicks like the like billiard ball into the air and like kicks the guy in the head with it.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I think that's like the big CG moment. It's like I think definitely CG'd that billiard ball in. And I love like Jet Li's like his like the weird like his like weird acupuncture tactic.
And his bracelet thing.
Yeah, he has his bracelet of like acupuncture needles like he's always using to like disable people. And then like the Kiss of the Dragon in the title is like the like forbidden acupuncture move where you stick in the back of someone's neck and they die from like the blood flowing through their brain or something.
I do like when the guy's like, this is a forbidden spot, Kiss the Dragon. He's like, kiss my ass, like that. That was pretty fun.
Yeah. And then his head explodes. Like, it doesn't explode, but like
he's all like, the blood just rushes through.
Seizuring in blood. Yeah. But yeah, definitely, I think. As far as like Jet Li's like American movies, I think it's probably toward the top of the list.
What do you think about the female lead, like Bridget
Fonda?
Bridget Fonda.
Well, it was weird because like I think this was like, I mean, I think it was definitely after. Yeah, it was years after like point like when she was in like the La Femme Nikita remake.
Yeah.
So it's weird like because like she's already established like. She could do action movies, but then it's like she's like she doesn't do anything in this movie. She's just
a damsel in distress.
Yeah, she kicks one guy in the balls, and that's it. So yeah, it's definitely kind of weird. It's like, and like was it Point of No Return like a like, wasn't that like Luc Besson? Didn't he produce that or something?
Which one?
Like.
Point of No Return. It's like it's La Femme Nikita.
Yeah, which Luc Besson directed, and I think he like produced like Point of No Return, I think, right? So like he produced Kiss of the Dragon. So it's like he knows that like Bridget Fonda could probably do action stuff, but it's just like nah.
No, give her a break.
Yeah, she going to be prostitutes.
I mean, it's his movie. I get it.
Yeah, and then what was the French cop? Is the French cop the one that came to like or America and like lured her back to Paris or something? Or like
I guess so.
It's she explains it at one point, but it's like very vague. Like how the hell she even like ended up in Paris and like ended up in like as a prostitute and stuff. Like
and she can't escape.
Yeah,
she has her kid.
Yeah, who the cop? The evil cop is holding. An orphanage. But yeah, it's It's definitely unclear, like, because, like, she has, like, there's the pimp who works under the cop, but the cop is, like, the main pimp, I guess.
But he's
that's, like, his side hustle, is, like, he's, like, pimping. a corrupt cop who, like, runs, like, a prostitution ring.
And a drug ring?
And a drug ring.
But what about the main prostitute that is, like, an assassin?
Yeah.
What, like, I thought she'd play more of a pivotal role, but we just don't see more of it.
Well, because the cop, the evil cop, like, shoots her in the head.
Yeah, but she's actually pretty good as an assassin. I'd understand that part.
I guess it was all to set up Jet Li to be, like, it was all to set him up, I guess. The French cop, like, hired, like, Bridget Fonda and, like, the other prostitute, and I think the plan the entire time was, like, have them both kill him, but then Bridget Fonda was, like nervously puking in the bathroom, so she wasn't involved in it. Because they knew that the Chinese, police were sending someone to, like, work with them, but then it was screw up, since they're all, like, evil cops, like, it was, like, screw up their entire operations. They're, like, we're gonna set up, like, whoever they send from China, we're gonna, like, set them up, and then it just had to be like, oh, they sent their martial arts master to us, so we're all screwed.
Yeah, like, they really should have done their homework before they're like, yeah, this random person.
Yeah, which, like, I love, like, there's like they do like the requisite, like, they like read like all of like Jet Li's like achievements, and it's like master. Martial arts master, like marksmanship master, like this whole like portfolio, and then like it's just like, oh man.
Yeah, you definitely should have read this before you got this far.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely super fun Jet Li movie. If you haven't seen that one yet, check it out. Although you can definitely tell it was in that Jet Li rap era, though, because, like, most of the whole soundtrack is, like, rap songs. Or electronic songs.
I would have been fine with electronic, but I guess it's the French, it's hip-hop, so it's, like, you want that.
Yeah, there's Mystical as a song, and, like they use, like, Lap Dance from N.E.R.D., and, like...
I remember Shake That Ass was in there, right?
Yeah. It's a bunch of, like, it's not even, like, it's just, like, it's, like, very, like, very weird. Like, they definitely, like, it's, like, they, like, stick out. The songs that you definitely stick out.
Like, oh, did this have, like, a lot of plays on the radio? Cool, we're gonna put this in the movie.
Yeah, but it was between Romeo Must Die and Cradle to the Grave. So, it was right in that, like, we need to. We're combining martial arts and hip hop for some reason. Although this one didn't star or co-star DMX though, so or Ja Rule.
Missing out.
They're both like, it's like, yeah, it's this movie needs to have like a martial arts person, usually Jet Li, and either DMX or Ja Rule. So, yeah, so that's pretty much it for me this week. We can wrap things up. Even though Thanksgiving is over, definitely have a site. You can still sync up our Thanksgiving commentary up to Thanksgiving over on Prime Video and check that out. Watch a crazy axe-murdering turkey kill people for an hour.
Worth it.
So, yeah,
I mean, partly.
Yeah. So that's up on the site right now, and then we're going to have a Christmas commentary coming up very soon, sometime before Christmas here on the site, so definitely stay tuned for that. And all the regular stuff is up on the site as well. Definitely head over and check all the regular features up on the site every day. And yeah, so for Chris, I'm Zach, and we will see you next week. For more Everything Action, head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram at everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.